Hi, I'll get started here. We are holding cool lines from the bottom of Nunzaya Nevada. Okay, we started a discussion yesterday as follows. The question was, how do we know that a Bechor can be eaten for 2 days and one night, as we say in our Mishnah? So we were discussing that there's a limud, that we were discussing that there's a hekesh between it and the chaza and shurik of shlomim. So the chaza and shurik of shlomim can be eaten for 2 days and one night, so can the Bechor. But then we discussed, what about though, why don't we compare it instead to the chaza and shurik of toiza, which Rabbi Yosef really is arguing that's what we should do. And Rabbi Akiva conceded the point, we should, but then which would mean only one day and one night. However, since the pasuk says, it was sarim yiyaloch, the extra word, yiyaloch, means that there's an additional habayah, there's an additional entity, meaning another day that you're given. Then they told Rabbi Shmuel about this, and Rabbi Shmuel says, Rabbi Akiva, what are you talking about? This is to learn the how do we know that the chaza and shurik of the Torah themselves are eaten for a day and a night? We know that only by a hekish, the fact that there's a chaza and shurik in the first place by Torah, we only know from shlomim, that's a hekish, and you can't use a hekish on top of a hekish, as we learned earlier in the parish. So therefore, you can't possibly say that you learn it that way. You have to say, therefore, that of necessity, the hekish is between Bechor and shlomim. So Rabbi Akiva answers to that, or the Gemara answers in Rabbi Akiva's name, that Rabbi Akiva is going to say that it's basically the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel turns on the question when you have a heimenu v'javar achar. If you're learning something by a hekish, but you're not learning the entire thing from a hekish, just one particular detail of it, is that considered a hekish or not? In this case, what do we have? The fact that there's a chaza and shurik by Torah, sure, we learn that from Shlomim, but the fact that chaza and shurik can be eaten only for one day and one night, we don't learn that from Shlomim, that we have within the Torah itself, because the chaza and shurik is part of the Torah, and the pasuk says the Torah is eaten for a day and a night. So that's called heimenu v'davar achar. You're learning heimenu. That's the thing. So it's heimenu, you're learning one detail of it from it itself, from the Torah itself, you learn the day and the night, that it applies to the chaza and shurik, but there's also the davar achar, you're also learning from a different place, namely from shlomim, the fact that there's a chaza and shurik in the first place. Rabbi Shmuel holds such a thing is considered a full-fledged hekish, therefore you can't do a hekish from a hekish, as we said before, and Rabbi Akiva disagrees, he says that's not considered a hekish, because essentially you're learning it heimenu, you're essentially learning it from within the Torah itself, and therefore, sure, you can make a hekish then between Torah and shlomim. Because Rabbi Shmuel is saying, hey, menu v'davar achar, he considered it a hekish. The fact is, you're learning an important detail of it from something else. You wouldn't know that there was a chaza and shurik, which has a day and a night, to talk about that there's a day and a night time limit for it if you didn't know from shlomim, which is by a hekish. So Rabbi Shmuel holds that's considered a full-fledged hekish.
He takes the part that's not hekish, he
ignores that. The fact is that there's a chaza and shurik, which has a day and a night to eat, you know that there's a chaza and shurik from shlomim. Therefore, you can't turn around and learn from that chaza and shurik to something else. Therefore, he says it has to be that you're learning directly from shlomim to bechor without having the Torah in between. Whereas Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Okay. So that's where we're holding now. Four lines from the bottom of Nunzayin Amara. In practice, everybody agrees on the actual facts. The only one who's disagreeing with the actual facts is Rabbi Yosef Agrivi, and even he is not really disagreeing with the facts. He's just saying, I don't accept your limud for it. First, he didn't accept Rabbi Tyson's limud, and then Rabbi Akiva mentions, fine, I accept your limud, but you also have to consider the yiyaloch. In the end, everybody agrees that the actual halacha of the first nafal l'shnei yom v'layla. We're just disagreeing how exactly you derive it from the pasuk.
How can they agree on the derivation? Why not?
Where everybody agrees on a certain halacha, they just disagree. We just had yesterday or two days ago, we had the example where everybody agrees that Tojim Talim can be shechted everywhere in the Azara, but the Chachamim said that the fact that you can shecht them in the north, we learn from a Kavah Chomer. If you can shecht Tojim there, surely you can shecht Tojim Talim. And Rabbi Yezid disagreed and said, I need an actual prophet to teach us that concept. But they both agree with it. They both agree with the din. Yeah, that happens all the time. Here's another example. B'shleim l'mando amalei ha'vehekish. So, I can understand, according to the opinion, which is Rabbi Akiva, that heimenu v'davar achar is not considered a hekish, and therefore that you can learn something else from it by a hekish. So, like this, kind of the sieve, so you have like this, when it comes to the korbanos of Yom Kippur, Let's remember, you have a pattern where the blood is sprinkled achas l'mayla v'shevel l'mata in the Kodesh HaKadosh. Then you have a soyer, same thing. And then you have all, and then you have the same thing that's repeated with both, with each one of them outside the Purim. Achas l'mayla v'shevel l'mata, which is why in the Seder Avodah of Yom Kippur, we have the, we sing along with chazan four times. Achas v'achas, etc. Okay.
I don't know why we do that.
Well, okay, because it's a nice, it's a nice song.
Yeah. You knew, if you were there, you would know.
Of course, you
okay,
knew,
whatever. Come on.
That's why you know.
Okay, come on. No. All right. Now, the point is, okay, the important point is, like, what does the Pasuk say about the Korbanos? It says, regarding the par, it says as follows. It says, he should sprinkle with his finger in front of the kapodas toward the east. Then in front of the kapodas, he should sprinkle seven times. Now, in that first part, it doesn't say how many sprinklings. It just says he should sprinkle. Then in the second part, it says seven. So you don't know how many there's supposed to be l'mayla. You know there's supposed to be some number, but you don't know how many. By the sir, it's the other way around. By the sir, it says, v'hiza oisai ala kapodas v'lifnei kapodas. So the sir, when you're doing it in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, just the opposite. It says you should sprinkle it on the kapodas and in front of the kapodas. It implies just one. So there you know achas l'mayla, but you don't know the shevel l'mata by the third. So we have to learn by a hekesh from each other, right? Well, also as domei kasha, also the damapur, the pasuk says you do it to the blood of the third, just as you did to the blood of the past. So then in turn we have to learn from there to outside to what's done in front of the parech. So b'shleim l'manda amaloi have a hekesh. So I can understand the point of Rabbi Akiva that hinenu v'dover achar is not really considered a hekesh. Then you can find like this. You find the pasuk says v'chein yaseh l'oyel moed. So also he should do in the oyel moed, meaning outside the Kodesh Kedoshim, that he should sprinkle in front of the kaparis, in front of the parishes, meaning k'shem shemazel l'fnai v'lefnim achas l'mayla v'shevel l'mata midam apar. So we learn like this. Just as he sprinkled inside the Kodesh Kedoshim, one above, seven below, using the blood of the par, kach mazel b'heichol, so he does also in the heichol with the blood of the par, the same thing, achas l'mayla v'shevel l'mata. Uch'shem shel l'fnai v'lefnim achas l'mayla v'shevel l'mata midam apar, kach mazel b'heichol. So you do the same thing with the third inside the Kodesh Kedoshim and out and outside of it. So now this is an example of Heimenu v'dover achar, because you're learning by each one, by the power inside the Kodesh Kedoshim, it says part of the detail. By the third, it says the other part. You're learning from each other. According to Rabbi Akiva, though, you're saying that's not really considered a hekesh, because it's Heimenu v'dover achar. So therefore, according to him, no problem. Because Heimenu, because you're learning part of it from it itself. It says by the tire itself, seven lamata. It doesn't say achas l'mayla. That we learn from the third. And vice versa. By the third, we only know the achas l'mayla. We don't know the shevel lamata. So they learn from each other. That's Heimenu v'dover achar. Each one is learning partially it says by itself, by the tire, and partially it says by the other one, the third, and vice versa. So if you say, according to Rabbi Akiva, that's not considered a hekesh, fine. And that explains how you're able to learn from the hekesh, v'chein yasel, oil moed, that you should do the same thing in the heichol. In front of the parish, because it's not a hekesh from a hekesh, because the original thing you're not learning from a hekesh. You're learning from Heimenu v'dover achar, and Rabbi Akiva is not counting that as a hekesh. Elo, l'manda amar havi hekesh, but according to Rabbi Shmuel, who says such a thing is a hekesh, how are you able to learn the heichol from the Kodesh HaKadoshim with a hekesh, where the details in the Kodesh HaKadoshim themselves you learn with a hekesh? A hekesh of Heimenu v'dover achar, but Rabbi Shmuel is counting that as a hekesh. And as he said before in the Braitha, he knows, everybody knows that you can't learn a hekesh from a hekesh. So how corns Rabbi Shmuel? Everybody agreed on that. So corns Rabbi Shmuel, my ikalamemer. Then what are you going to say? How are you learning the sprinklings in front of the parishes? The answer is two possibilities. Number one, makoimus sudig meeting mahadodi. Number one, we can say, what we're doing is we're learning the one place from another place. In other words, what we're doing is like this. The first hekesh refers to the animals. The second hekesh refers to the places. So it's not really the same thing. What we're doing over here, the problem Rabbi Shmuel had with Rabbi Akiva's limud before is you want to take the amount of time that you can eat a bechor and learn it from the chaza and shoik of Todah, which in turn, how do you know how long you have for the chaza and shoik of Todah? You're learning from the chaza, from the fact that you're learning that there's a chaza and shoik in the first place. From Shlomim, you're learning the same exact item from one and then from the other. Rabbi Shmuel won't accept that. Here you're learning two different things. First, you're making a hekesh between the par and the sir, the two different animals. Then you're making a hekdesh between the two places, Kodesh Kadoshim and Kodesh. That's acceptable. Rabbi Shmuel would agree that such a thing would be acceptable. That's not considered a hekdesh. From a hekdesh, because the hekdeshim refer to two different things. Hmm. One's referring to the animals, and one's referring to the people. To the place.
All this work figuring out as soon as we get past Kodeshim, we'll never have to use all these rules again.
Well, okay, nevertheless, we're going to use them throughout Kodeshim. But anytime we learn things of Kodeshim, which includes Moshiach. But you know what? You look in the Gemara and Shabbos, right? When it tells you the six words that refer to the six Zorim, Vahoya, Munasi, Kappa, etc., what word over there represents Kodeshim? Chochmah. Because more than anything else, we need to understand the Chochmah there, the Son of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in this Seder, yeah. Okay.
That's what
we're saying. Okay. Or another way you could understand it, chot mitknim b'chad zim negomer. You could answer like this, that Rabbi Shmuel would say, that, let's say, fine, you're going to argue you don't accept the previous answer, it's a hekesh of behemoth and it's a hekesh of makomoth. After all, it all comes down to the same thing. What it is though, what we're doing is, we have to learn the entire hekel from pnim. So therefore, what we're doing is we're learning it all as one big thing together. Chutz mitnim b'chad zim negomer. We have what's done outside. We're learning from the pnim all as one big thing. So in other words, what it means is that we're learning what takes place outside in the heichal by both the par and the sur. We're learning it all as a unit with what comes from what was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore,
chutz
is learned from pnim. Yeah, b'chad zim negomer. We're learning it all at once. We're not doing two different hekeshim. In other words, we're saying that everything that takes place in the pnim, also takes place in the chutz. So it's not really a hekesh from a hekesh. Look in Rashi, the last line of the wide line on top of Rashi. It's not similar to the hekesh of a hekesh that Rabbi Shmuel had a problem with before. Because the hekel, the entire thing, we need to be able to learn from what's going on in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the nitin hekesh, the dorish, which varmam frosh mitnim, once we have that the hekesh applies to all the things that it says inside, from the lamasa, the power, the mile of the sir, namely that you have by the power that you have the seven lamasa, which specifies by it, and the one lamila by the sir, nidrash v'lamid v'vashachas, so we darish in it and we learn it all as one big unit, uba afmash lamid, the pnim, the hekeshima. So then what we learn from the pnim all comes in a hekesh with it. So Rashi says like this, when it comes to the previous one about the toida and the b'chor or whatever, if it had said that the bechor is like the toida, for example, and then we would say, okay, the toida is yom v'layla and the bechor is yom v'layla, then fine, then Rabbi Shmuel would accept that. The only problem is, because the pasuk didn't make a hekesh with the toda itself, it made a hekesh with the chozer and shurik of toda, which the chozer and shurik of toda itself we only know from shlamim. That's where Rabbi Shmuel had a problem with it. Whereas here, we're learning it all together. We're learning that everything that applies the snim, we're saying that everything that applies the snim by a hekesh applies the chutz. It's not that we're learning two different things, we're learning the pattern, we're learning the sawyer separately. We're learning everything that takes place the snim takes place the chutz. And therefore, previously what we were saying is that we're learning two different occasions. One to be makish the power to the sir, and the other one to be makish, and then the other one to be makish, the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the Kodesh. That was one answer that we had. But now the other answer we're saying is that the first one is you have the power and the sir themselves are one unit, because you have the part of the detail by one and part by the other, and now you're learning from that to the Kodesh. So that's acceptable. Tosfos asks on that a couple of questions, because the fact is we saw earlier in our perek before, for example, we found that by the korban that's brought to Avodah Zarah last week's parasha, we had the fact that the yesteres of shtei kloyas, the halavim of it, actually brought on the mizbeach is something that we learned from the hekesh. Even though the hekesh itself refers to things that are stated by the power helam davar shel sibur itself, so
when you take the whole unit as a whole, then even Rabbi Ishmael.
That's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. Rabbi Shmuel would agree, would accept that, right? So as long as it all comes together. If there was a hekesh between the bechor and the toda itself, then fine. But now that there's a hekesh with the toda, with a detail of the toda, the chozah and shreis, which we know only from the shlamim, then Rabbi Shmuel has a problem with that. And that's why he said to Rabbi Akiva, you made a mistake. You have to learn it differently. Anyway, that's the thing. Basically, yeah. Because that's what we're saying. Because then it's not two hekeshim. Then it's one big hekesh. Okay, anyway, Tosfos has a problem with that because we saw before that there were various details that we said we learned by a hekesh, even though certain details it actually says by the one korban itself. So actually, Tosfos in Yuma also does. You have the sugya in Yuma as well. And Tosfos over there discusses the difference is that those things, for example, we're talking about the chalev of the sur of a desarta, but the difference is the chalev, it has nothing to do specifically with the sprinkling of the blood. They're two different aspects of the avodah. But here we're talking about different aspects of the same avodah. Or even by the bechor and the toda over there, we're talking about different aspects of eating, of the time that we're talking about of eating it. So fine, you're talking about cause of the shoik versus the korban itself. It's not like two completely disjoint things like it would be, like if it's different parts of the same din, as opposed to different parts of the same korban that don't directly have anything to do with each other, like the blood versus the same morning. Anyway, which we said before, that we said everybody would agree that's considered a hekesh, which then you can't learn from another.
When you have one spot of one avoda.
Yeah. So anyway.
That's when it becomes a problem for Rabbi Shmuel.
So Tosfos answers over here a different answer, that once it says by the sir, achas lamaila, then what it means is from that we know that the same thing applies to the sir, b'fnim and b'chutz. And once we have that it says shevel amasa by the fire, that also means the same thing, b'fnim and b'chutz. So in other words, what it is when we say over here b'chad dibna gomer, we mean we're blending all of them together and saying we don't even really have a hekesh per se. We have it all blended together. That all four of them are essentially the same thing. So it's described by one and it applies to all four of them. Meaning there's the power inside, the sorrow inside, the power outside, and the sorrow outside. Okay. All right, continues the Gemara. B'shleim l'mandar am a havi hekish, or actually hagor tabach, and then shittim akabetz is changed into loy havi hekish. I can understand then, let's ask again, we'll bring another braisa that works well according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that heimenu v'davar achar is not a hekish, and therefore that you can learn from it using another hekish. Heimu d'chtiv, then you have as follows. The Pasuk says, mimashvitzeichem tabiyu lacham t'nuva. The Pasuk says, from the places where you live, meaning anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, You should bring bread that's going to be waved, which is the shtei lechem that I brought on Shavuos. Now from them we use a limud from them to learn about certain other korbanos where bread is also brought with them. Namely, when it comes now, you have the following korbanos are brought with bread. You have the shtei lechem themselves. You have the two kids. You have the two zivchei shamit zivur together with shtei lechem. You also have the korbanos of a nazir come with bread, and you also have the korbanos of, and you also have a korban toda come with bread. Now, by the toda, it doesn't say, by the toda in particular, it doesn't say how large they should be. So by the nazir, I don't think it says either, actually, but that's a different matter. Here we're going to deal with how we're learning over here about the toda. So the Pasuk says, "Mimoshvitzeichem tabi'u lachem t'nufa." From your dwelling places, you should bring bread that's going to be waved, which is a shtei lachem. Now, she'ein tamud lema tabi'u. Now, the word tabi'u is not necessary in the Pasuk. "Mimoshvitzeichem lachem t'nufa." From your dwelling places, there should be bread of t'nufa. Ma tamud lema tabi'u. So, what do we learn from the word tabi'u? Kol she'atem mevi mimakom lamakom acha harei kazeh. Means any other time when you're bringing bread together with a korban, it has to be similar to this. Meaning, therefore, malahal and isarin lachala. So just like when it comes to the shtei lechem, the pasuk says shtayim shnei esronim, that you have two loaves of bread and they're two esronim, meaning each one is an isarin. But just like over here, it's an isarin, which is a shir chala, so in modern terms, anywhere between 3 and 5 pounds. So just like over there, you need an isarin per chala, afkan isarin lachala. The same way when it comes to the hekesh. Yeah. So the same way when it comes to the toda, also you have to have one isorin per chala. But the question then is, so if you're going to learn that way, then you should argue like this. Then in that case, by the Shteilechem, the whole thing consists of two Esrenim. So maybe when it comes to the Torah, also the whole thing should consist of two Esrenim. In other words, now by the Torah, you have 40 loaves of bread. Now the actual din is, what you do is you have there's three types of masa, and there's three types of masa, 10 loaves each, and there's one set of loaves of chum. So you have altogether there are 40 loaves, 30 masa, 10 chum. What actually happens is you take one isarin per challah of the chumis ones, and you take one isarin per three challahs of the masa ones, meaning that the masa ones are three times smaller, one third the size of the chumis ones. So the chumis ones, you have 10 loaves made out of one isarin, and the masa ones, you have 30 loaves, three different types, made out of, not necessarily. I mean, you need the same amount of flour, it's just the chumis has risen, and the, yeah. Okay. So there's ten estronim for the chomet, and therefore each challah is one isarin. By the master, each one is one third of an isarin, that's what it is. So e malahalan shnei estronim afkan shnei estronim. So you could argue then in that case, but if we're learning from the Shteilechem, if the Shteilechem you have two estronim for the whole thing, because each challah consists of one isarin, then maybe also by the Torah it should be two estronim total, where in fact it's much more. Chamadlema tiyena. No, therefore the pasuk says also again by the Shteilechem, it says tiyena they shall be. And isarin again is a shiur challah. It's anywhere between 3 and 5 pounds. You go into a master bakery, you see them kneading. You're not allowed to knead more than a shiur challah when it comes to master. So that's the master. When a woman is when a person is making challah and they want to do a precious challah, that's the minimum amount that they need. So it's anywhere between 3 and 5 pounds, depending on which post you ask. So how exactly you're learning from Tiyena? There's a couple of different possibilities. One is what Rashi explains in Menachos, the reason is because you have an extra yud in the word Tiyena, so that tells us 10 chalos. Tosfos doesn't like that because you need the yud in there. It's a common thing in the pasuk that you have in a feminine verb like that. You have one yud as part of the shodesh and one to be part of the suffix. There's the tiyena. Tosfos explains also because the idea is tiyena is a mute, so it means only these tiyena should be this way, as opposed to other things should be a different amount, should be larger.
If you didn't have the word tiyena,
in other words, the point is either you need the whole word tiyena, which teaches us therefore that only the Shteilechem are like this, one challah for each isarin, whereas the other ones are not like that. So only by the Shteilechem rather than two isarin total. By the other ones, by the chumis ones for a Torah, it's not like that. It's one isarin per challah. So either we're learning from tiyena, meaning that only these are like that, as opposed to other ones are not, or we're learning from the extra yud of tiyena, that it means that there's 10 chalas to 10 estrenim. So, continues the Braith. So, v'lamadnu asor l'chomet, fine. So that teaches us then that you need 10 estrenim for the chomet loaf, so one isarin per loaf. Asor l'mas minayin, where do we know that you also need 10 estrenim for the masa? Again, shared among all of them. You have one third of an isarin per individual master. Because the pasuk says that you bring the Torah, it mentions the three types of master, and it says on chalos of chomet bread. So it means neged chomet habi master. It means you should bring an amount of master equal parallel to the amount of chomet. So therefore, if you have 10 estronim for the chomet, you need 10 estronim for the master. Now, this is an example of, how are we learning the chometz ones? We're learning heimenu v'davar achar. We're learning part of it from themselves, because the fact that you need 10 loaves, it says by the Torah itself, that you have 10 loaves of chometz. The details of how large they have to be, that you need an isarin per challah, we're learning from the Shteilechem, so that's heimenu v'davar achar. And then we're turning around and learning from them to the master ones. So according to Rabbi Akiva, that works. Yeah, because they meant of a Darachar. Yeah. What about a Kohen Rebbe Shmuel who says that such a thing is considered a hekesh? Then how are you learning from it using another hekesh? The answer is Tavir Yiseri. He would say it's not really a hekesh, because he would say that the word Tavir by the Shrei Lechem because it's an extra word in the pasuk, not like we were assuming originally, not like the Braisa was telling us that constitutes a hekesh. No, what it actually does is that word, because it's extra, what it is that it makes it considered as if the fact that it said that you need a certain number of astronomy, as if it said explicitly by the Torah. So therefore, we're not really learning from the Shrei Lechem. Hemenu Radova Acha, Rashi says, would be, for example, let's say you had a hekesh between the Chometz of Torah and the Shrei Lechem, and you had in a different pasuk where it didn't say anything about one Isar and Perchala. And then we had to use another hekesh to teach us that it meant that one Isar and Perchala. Like this, when the Torah itself, it says 10 chalas, and you have the word Tavir by the Shrei Lechem, which is extra, which makes it considered, therefore, as if it was written by the Torah, then that's it. It's not a hekesh.
You find it in two different places.
No, but the point is, no, you find the word Tavir only by the Shrei Lechem.
Exactly.
And because it's not necessary over there, it's as if it said it actually by the Lachmei Torah themselves. So therefore, we're not really learning from the Shrei Lechem. We are taking a word from the Shrei Lechem, the word Tavir, and moving it over there. But we're not really learning the size of the Chalas of Chometz from the Shrei Lechem.
Because the word Tavir
makes it as if it explicitly said that there's one Isor and Pilchala, as if it explicitly said that by the Lachmei Torah. And it explicitly says it, then of course you can learn from something else. We had a similar concept earlier. We had an idea over there that, for example, when we were discussing the whole thing of also we had over there that when you have extra words in the pasuk, sometimes we can consider it as if the actual statement itself was said in the pasuk. It's not that we're learning by a hekesh, it's that we actually take the words from the other pasuk and insert them into this pasuk. Because of the extra word that we have. Yeah. So therefore, a real hekesh would be where you're not inserting from one word to another, you're just learning from one to the other. Yeah. That was Rashi's point. In other words, if we had, for example, a hekesh between the Chometz of Torah and the Shrei Lechem in a pasuk where it didn't say anything about the size of a chalas, and then we needed another hekesh to learn about the master, that would be a hekesh from a hekesh.
But since here we're actually taking,
because of the word Tavir, we're actually taking the size of the chalas and inserting it into the pasuk about Lachmei Torah, then there you go. So it already says there explicitly, in effect. And therefore we can learn from it to the master by a hekesh.
Even Rabbi Akiva wouldn't need that.
Rabbi Shmuel would be fine with that. Right. Tertius also points out, by the way, that what it amounts to actually is you have a detail over here about the number of chalas, which we actually learn with Xavier Shava, and then we're trying to learn from that with a hekesh. Now we learned when we had the whole sugya before about mixing and matching the midas shachar and yeshivam, we left it open whether you can do from a Xavier Shava to a hekesh.
We could from a hekesh to a Xavier Shava.
No, we said we couldn't. But from a Xavier Shava and then learn with a hekesh, the one possibility is we said over there that according to the popo, we said maybe yes, and then we said according to Mazutra, maybe not. However, we said over there that those rules only apply when it's all within kodshim. Here, how do we know about the actual number of loaves? We actually learn from Trumas Meister. Rashi mentions it over here, actually. The fact that there are 10 loaves, we learn from Trumas Meister, that just like Trumas Meister, you're giving 1/10 to the Koyin, here also you're giving 1/10 to the Koyin, we learn by Xeder Shah.
That's not kodshim,
it's pulling. And therefore, according to that way of looking at it, you can mix and match. Xeder Shah, but you're a hekesh. Right, exactly. Okay, the Gemara continues. At Pesach ein nechel. The last thing we had in the Mishnah is the korban Pesach can only be eaten, among other things, we said it can only be eaten till chatzot. So, man kana, which kana is it that says such a thing, that it can only be eaten till chatzot? Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So Rav Yosef says that would be Rav Elazar ben Azariah holds that way. The Tanya, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, right? Nema kan balayla azeh. It says by makas sechoras, or rather it says by eating the korban Pesach, that you should eat the korban Pesach on this night. Later on it says, Hashem says, I will pass through Eretz Mitzrayim on this night and bring Makkos Chatzos. Just like over there, when is Hashem passing through at Chatzos? So the same thing over here, the deadline is Chatzos.
So that's
Rav Elazar and Azariah. It's actually Gzeirah Shavah. It's the same word. But the point is, Rav Elazar and Azariah holds that it's Midaraisa that you can only eat the Korban Pesach through Chatzos. By the way, I think Slach. Chatzos Alayla. Yeah.
That's what we do today.
Well, so 1 second, we'll get to that at the end, actually, how this affects the halacha nowadays. But wait, somebody, I think it's a Slack, talks about the question, who says, so maybe it means the Makkos Bechoros took place exactly at the stroke of midnight, maybe it means you can only eat the Korban Pesach exactly at the stroke of midnight. And the answer is, look, you've got to eat a kazayas of it, you know, eat Eshel Samson, you can't possibly make sure that you eat it exactly at the moment of midnight. And also he says, by the same logic, it also can't mean, it might be Tnei Yeshua, I don't remember. It's one of the Akronim, I don't remember who. He also says, by the same logic, he also can't say that the Pasuk means that you begin eating it at midnight, among other things, because we should assume that you're eating it before the time of Makkos Bechoros seems to be implied by the Pasuk, before they're about to bear its Mitzrayim, rather than after. Right. So anyway, that's Rav Elazar ben Azariah says that midyar right to the deadline of something. Amalei Rav Akiva, so Rav Akiva asked him, what do you mean? You also have, the Pasuk says by the Korban Pesach that you should eat B'chit Pozon in haste, which implies Ad Shas Kipozon. This means you're able to eat it until the time when you're hastening to leave Mitzrayim. Now they're not going to be leaving Mitzrayim at night because Hashem tells them, so nobody's allowed to leave their house until the morning. Only in the morning did they start leaving Mitzrayim. So therefore, So Rav Akiva says, though, that the Shas Kipozin implies they can eat it until all the way to Shabbat. Actually, the Gemara in Brachas explains that the underlying machlokas between Rav Elazar ben Azariah and Rav Akiva is when we say Kipozin, whose Kipozin are we talking about? Right, are we talking about the Kipozin, the haste of the Mitzrayim? As soon as Makkos Bechoros hit, the Mitzrayim are in a panic to get them out of there as fast as possible, Kare in pajamas in the middle of the night as the kids love singing, and he's going in desperately looking for Moshe and Aaron and telling him, Kumusumi Teichami, but Moshe tells him we're not thieves, we're not going to sneak out in the middle of the night, we're waiting until the morning. So the Mitzrayim are having Kipozin in the middle of the night. The Jewish people, when their Kipozin to leave, only in the morning. So therefore, Rav Elazar ben Azariah says, Kapsar is yes. Alright, Imkein Matam Aleva Balaylaza. So Rav Akiva says, okay, so what am I doing?
If you do it in the morning, why do you say Balaylaza?
Balaylaza meaning until the morning. You have until all the way to Shachar. Imkein Matam Aleva Balaylaza. So says Rav Akiva, then what am I doing with this Pasuk Balaylaza, which you, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, are using for your Zeta Shavah? Like this, because if you didn't have that, you would think that the Korban Pesach is like any other Kodshim, you eat it on the day it's shechted. Meaning, in other words, you shecht it during the day on Erev Pesach. Now, any other Korban you shecht during the day, you have. You eat it that day, and you eat it that night. So maybe the Korban Pesach also, you can start eating on Erev Pesach.
They were shechted during the day.
Yeah, of course, it was shechted during the day. So if you didn't have the Pasuk Balaylaza, you would think as soon as you shecht it, you can start eating it. No. Therefore, the Pasuk specifically says at night, it can only be eaten by night, but not by day. It's the only korban that's eaten only by night, right. Only by night, right. All of the korbanos, you have the day that you brought them, as well as the following night, and then the shlomim, and bechor, and night, so you also have the following day. Okay. So that's Rav Yosef is saying, therefore, that when our Mishnah says, V'ena nechal ala achasos, that is specifically according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Akiva would disagree with that and say it could actually be to Lalo Tashak. Omale Abaya, Abaya asks Rav Yosef, Umimai, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Ujarai. Who says that you have to assume that the statement in our Mishnah is according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and we're talking about on a Ujarai level. Dilma Drabonon, maybe what we mean is that the Mishnah means that you have till midnight on a midrabanan level, or the half is min avera, and the chachamim did that in order to keep you away from avera, as it says in the first Mishnah in Brachos. So what forces you, therefore, Rav Yosef, to say that the Mishnah is specifically according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, when you could just as well say that it works according to Rav Akiva also? The answer is yes, but in that case, what do you mean by saying it can only be eaten until Chatzos? Instead, let's just say it can be eaten until Chatzos. V'nechol ad Chatzos, just like by the other one, it says v'nechol l'yom v'layla ad Chatzos, or whatever. He was sure to say v'nechol ad Chatzos. The fact that it says v'enoi nechol ela ad Chatzos, So therefore, it means Ela Pihasam. So it means that it's similar to the other things that are mentioned in the Mishnah, which, what are we mentioned by the Mishnah? Four, we mentioned in the Mishnah four things that are unique to the Korban Pesach. Ein nechal ela b'layla, it can only be eaten by night. The ein nechal ela chaflois. The ein nechal ela menuyah, it can only be eaten by those who are registered for it. The ein nechal ela soli, and it can only be eaten roasted. Since it says, together with all the other ones, and all the other ones are on a Daraisa level, none of them are Darabanan, then therefore we have to assume, therefore, Akhanami Daraisa, so we would have to understand then, says Rabbi Yosef, that the Ela Achasais of our Mishnah is also telling us something is Daraisa.
Because all the other ones are.
So Rashi actually brings a girsa, but doesn't hold like it, that there was a girsa in front of him, that the Gemara is actually giving two different answers. One is the fact that it says, Ela Ad Chassoy, and the other one is that it lists it together, and the other one is that it lists it together with the other one. So Rashi is in Zerus that, the Tosfos says, you could understand like this. If you have two different answers. One is, again, the fact that it says Ela Ad Chassoy instead of just saying Ad Chassoy like by the other one. The other thing is like this. So in other words, by the other ones, we would understand the Chassoy is only Midrabah. But then, therefore, it just says you can eat them till Chassoy, implying, in other words, in principle, you could eat them longer, but the Chachamim prevented you. Here it says Ela Ad Chassoy means specifically you only have till Chassoy on a Daraisa. That would only work upon Jerubal Azman Adai. Also, that's the Gemara, but the Tosfos is explaining, Tosfos accepts the Girsa that Rashi rejects, which is that there's two different answers here in the Gemara. One, the fact that it says Ela, and the other one, it's not just the fact that it lists it with other things. It's the fact that it lists in the middle of the list. You have Ein Nechel Ela Balayla, which is Daraisa, Ein Nechel Ela Ad Chassoy, which are arguing whether it's Daraisa or Darabanan, Ainan Nachal Alalam Nuyah, which is Daraisa, Ainan Nachal Ala Soli, which is Daraisa. If Ainan Nachal Ela Achasoy was meant to be only Darabana, like Rabbi Akiva, what's it doing in the middle of the list? Put it at the end of the list. Exactly. So therefore, so that's the second answer, says Tosfos, is that the fact that it put it in the middle of a list of Daraisa implies that it's Daraisa. Now, who is the halacha like between Rabbi Lozman Azariah and Rabbi Akiva? The question is, as far as the Korban Pesach. Is it that Daraisa you can only eat the Korban Pesach till Chatzos, or is it Midaraisa you have to Lalois HaShachar and only Midrabanan you have to, only Midrabanan you have to Chatzos? So now the thing is you have like this. Our Mishnah, we're saying, is a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, we have other Stam Mishnahs like him also. At the end of Stokim, for example, you have a Mishnah that says over there that Pesach after Chatzos is Mitamei a closing hand, which means that it becomes Noiser at that point. On the other hand, you have a Mishnah in Megillah where it lists a whole bunch of mitzvahs that can be done any time during the day, and a couple of mitzvahs that can be done any time during the night, and one of the ones on the night list is in the Korban Pesach. So there's a Stam Mishnah according to Rabbi Akiva. So
that indicates.
Well, usually the halacha is like a Stam Mishnah. So you have a machlokas showing him who the halacha is like. Tosfos over here says the halacha ought to be like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because you have our Stam Mishnah and you have the one in Pesachim. It's not so much that you're counting Mishnayot against each other, but the point is more that you have in Pesachim itself, which is the main place where it talks about the dinim of the Korban Pesach, it says it. In our Mishnah also, which is the main place where it talks about the dinim of eating Korbanos. In Megillah, it's mentioning incidentally as part of a longer list. So therefore, there's reason to argue that the halacha should be like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. If the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, then it means the same thing would apply as far as eating matzah. Because when we eat matzah nowadays, is also daraisa. Maror is only darabanan, but matzah is daraisa. Therefore, the same rule would apply, and it would follow that you have to eat the matzah, meaning in particular the afikoman. Well, the korban pesach, when there's a korban pesach, but nowadays we don't have. But the afikoman, you would have to eat by chatzos. Not according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. On the other hand, there are rishonim. I believe that the Rambam is one of them, who passed in like Rabbi Akiva, that Midaraisa you're allowed to eat till Alos HaShachar, and just the Chachamim moved it up to Chatzos as a precaution. According to that, therefore, it would come out that you could eat the Afikoman all night, or at least in principle you could, if it weren't for the Gzeira of the Rabbanim. This is why our Minhag, the Lubavitcher Minhag in particular, is that the first night we're careful to eat the Afikoman by Chatzos to be choshish for the opinion of Tosfos that Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but the second night we're knowing according to Rabbi Akiva that we have to allow the Shachar.
There were two opinions.
Right. well, not really to fulfill two opinions, but this way. In other words, in Eretz Yisrael, they only have one day of Yom Tov, of necessity, they only do it Shel Chatzos. But the point is, at least like this, the second day is a little more lenient, because there's a concept of a second day itself is only the Rabbanim, because Minhag HaKatanim be a danger. So therefore, then we can be more makel according to the opinion that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. And be able to eat, and which would mean that we'd be able to eat carbon paste after all, which are the lights of
that. That's not the sweet by halachas. How can we say the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva?
The first night we're saying like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The second night we're saying like Rabbi Akiva, basically. That's what we're doing. The first night, because the first night is Daraisa, therefore we have to be careful. We have to follow the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. That's the point. Therefore, we can be more makel and follow the view that the opinion is like that halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore we have later till later to eat our appetite. Hadron halacha is Rabbi Akiva. Mishnah says. This parak basically is going to continue with the procedures for shechting and offering karbonis. We're going to talk also about bird karbonis, which we didn't talk about in Ezra Mekoyman. I'm not real sure actually why Ezra Mekoyman doesn't include the bird karbonis in the procedure for them, but yeah, you have much longer prakim than that in the Shnayas. I don't know. Whatever it is, it only deals with behemoth. It only deals with karbonis behemoth. Karbonis of birds are going to be in our parak. The mission says, Kodshik Kodshim Shashachtim Bereshim Mizbeach. So like this, we learned in the previous text that Kodshik Kodshim have to be shefted on the north side of the Azor. What happens if instead you shefted them on top of the Mizbeach? Rav Yossi Omekir and Nishchatu Basop. And Rav Yossi says, it's as if they were shefted in the north, therefore the Korban is Kodshim.
Because the Mizbeach, we'll see
in the Gemara, actually. You're jumping ahead a little bit, but yes, that's what the Gemara is going to say. Rav Yossi Bibi Hoda says it depends. Mechatsiyam is beach v'ladorim tadorim. If you shechted it in the southern half of the Mizbeach, so you know, you divide the Mizbeach in half, the Mizbeach is 32 amos wide, so you divide a line running down at 16 amos and 16 amos. If you shechted it in the southern 16 amos, then it would be tadorim, it would be like on the south side, therefore it would be possible. Mechatsiyam is beach v'ladorim. If you shechted it in the northern half, the 16 amos that are in the northern half, Kasop, and then it's the equivalent of shechting in the north, and the korban is kosher. Tosfos points out over here, that's where Rabbi Yossi Bibi have Rabbi Yossi, and we have Rabbi Yossi Bibi Hoda. Tosfos points out the expression in the Mishnah over here is sheshachton, which implies like after the fact. Like clearly you shouldn't be shechting on top of them as best. If he shechted them, then we have to deal with what are the deals. So Tosfos says that actually. Midaraisa Tosfos says you would actually even machachila be able to shecht on top of the mizbeach. The Rabbanon made a takana not to, because the animal may defecate on the mizbeach and it would be very disrespectful. So therefore, the Chachamim would have made a takana that you shouldn't do it machachila, and therefore that's why the Mishnah talks about the diyeved. Not everybody agrees with that, though. And in fact, you have a mechilta, I think, that says that it's actually possible to shecht them on top of them, or that it's actually possible to shecht them on top of them. Now, our Mishnah and our Gemara obviously aren't going according to that, but they're saying that there may be cases where it's kosher, but still, it comes out according to that, that there is a possibility that actually you're right, and maybe you're not even allowed to do it.
According to the tradition, Akedah Sitzrot happened exactly where the Mizbeach was.
Mm-hmm. So what about it?
So who's about to shecht them then?
Ah, so one second. So you bring up a good point, which I mentioned it briefly on the WhatsApp, which is, so, what? I did. No. So I, you don't look at it often enough, then, but I did. The question is, yes, why are we saying that Kodshim, the Hatzchila, or maybe even B'dievid, should be shechted next to the Mizbeach, when we find that Avraham, by Akedah Yitzchak, was about to shecht Yitzchak on top of the Mizbeach? So there's a couple of different possibilities. First of all, again, according to Tosfos over here, that midaraisa occurred, and only midrabanan you can't, because the animal may defecate. In Yitzchak's case, that's not an issue. He's not going to defecate on the Mizbeach over there. Therefore, there would be no issue with it. No, he's not going to. He's in control of himself. I mean, we're worried about that by an animal. We're not worried about that by a human being. Anyway, there's a couple of other answers as well. He was in control of himself. We see that he was calm about it. He told Abraham, tie me up in case I flinch. But he was in control. That's why we call it Akedah Tisbos. Yeah, he tied him up. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's one idea. The Roger Shover says like this. In principle, sure, Abraham could have shechted Yitzchak next to the Mizbeach, like he's supposed to do with Korbanos. The problem is, as soon as he shechts him, he's going to become an owner. That's his own son. Then he's not going to be able to do the Avodah anymore. So therefore, of necessity, he had to put him on top of the Mizbeach, and then he'd do the Avodah the right thing. That's the Roga Trevor says that. You have some Achronim that question that, because you have Piyutim from Yom Kippur that are said in some Kehillahs that imply that Abraham had the status of a Kohen Gadol, and a Kohen Gadol is allowed to bring the Korbanos when he's an Oinin, as we'll learn later in the Masechta. Okay. But then another... We touched on it briefly. We're going to deal with it more extensively. Yeah, we touched on it in the second paragraph when we were talking about what Fulham applied to Kohenim, right? Okay. Then you have another interesting answer that Ma'aril Diskin says, which is, let's think what happened after. Okay, so Avraham is about to shech Yitzchak, and all of a sudden the voice comes from Shemayim by Yikra Lamalach Hashem and Hashemayim and tells him don't touch Yitzchak. So what happens next? Avraham sees a ram over there caught in the bushes, and he takes it and brings it as a korban instead. Now we have to consider: did Avraham first take Yitzchak off the mizbeach before he shechted the aisle? So now Real Diskin says no, because Avraham thought to himself, after all, what happens if this aisle turns out to have a mum or to be tzreifer or whatever? Then no good. Then we have to go back to the original plan. Therefore, he left Yitzchak on the Mizbeach until he shechted the aisle and checked that there's no problem with it. Then he could take Yitzchak down and go ahead and then burn the aisle as an oil on the Mizbeach. So therefore, he shechted it next to the Mizbeach. That's the point. And the Ma'aril Diskin says, as a result of that, Hashem made the rule from then on, always shecht Korbanos next to the Mizbeach, not on it, in order to remember Akedah Yitzchak, in order to remember that extra measure of devotion that Avraham had, that he wasn't even going to say, Yitzchak is safe, let me get him down from here as fast as possible. No, he first waited just to make sure that the mitzvah can be done properly. Okay.
Meaning that the aisle has no moon,
right? Okay. And now getting to the Gemara. Omer of Asi, Omer of Yehonan. So, this that we're saying in the Mishnah, again, we have Rabbi Yossi saying that if you shecht the korban on top of the Mizbeach, it's the equivalent of shechting in the north. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says you have to divide the Mizbeach in half. So Rabbi Asi said, Omer of Asi, Omer of Yehonan, Omer Hoyer Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi used to say, and Rashi explains over here when he says Rabbi Yossi used to say, means Rabbi Yehonan had the Kabbalah from his teachers that Rabbi Yossi held this way. We're going to see later on how exactly we deduce that Rabbi Yossi holds so, but this is Rabbi Yehonan had the Kabbalah that Rabbi Yossi says, Kulei Mizbeach Tzofen Koi. The entire Mizbeach stands in the northern half of the Azara. And here it'll be helpful to have some diagrams. Yeah, because we want to move up a little closer to the after one. Yeah, that one? Okay, yeah, but that doesn't show the different possible places where the Mizbeach is. Okay. So if you look in the first diagram, and I got them online on one of their Defiomi sites. So if you look at the diagram on the top, if you look at the diagram on the top right, you have Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda saying, so you have the entire Mizbeach, which is shaded in gray, is all in the northern half of the Azara. You can see you have the line running down the middle of the Azara, which is also running down the middle of the door of the Heichal. And the entire Mizbeach is north of that. Therefore, that is why Rabbi Yossi is saying that if you shech the korban on top of the Mizbeach, and on top of the Mizbeach, then you're Yossi, because it's all in the northern half of the Azara. So in that case, you have to ask, then why is Rabbi Yossi using the expression as if it was shechted in the north? It was shechted in the north in that case. Because you would say, Ma'ur detaim ba'in al yerach, because if it weren't for that, you would think, after all, the Pasuk says that Korbanos are supposed to be shechted al yerach ha-mizbeach, meaning next to the mizbeach.
Like
the lecha. Again, that's the Ma'ur Diskin's word. But the point is, the fact is, the Pasuk says that Korbanos are supposed to be shechted al yerach ha-mizbeach, the day every morning in davening. The lecha, and in this case, you would argue that's not so, you don't have that. Because the fact is, you're not shechting it next to the Mizbeach. You would think, Rabbi Yossi has to point out, you would think, therefore, you're not Yossi al Yerach Mizbeach, and therefore, maybe the korban should be possible. Kamash Molan, that is Rabbi Yossi of Yehuda's Chiddush, that nevertheless, Ki'ilu Nishchatu Vastofen, it's as if you accomplished what it said al Yerach Mizbeach. Shita Mukabethus brings two explanations of that. One is that it means, so now we learned back in the second parak that if you were hanging in the airspace of the Azara and if the animal was hanging over there, it would be possible because not our Yerach HaMizbeach. But that
was
Yerach HaMizbeach literally means the leg, meaning the side of the Mizbeach.
How far away?
Again, you have the three different opinions, but according to the minimum opinion, which is actually Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, is the whole area directly north of the Mizbeach. So again, if you look at the diagram over here, according to him, it would be all this area next to the Mizrach, going all the way to the north wall of the Azara, right? But the point is, even Al Yerech, so then again, we said before that Al Yerech means possible if you shecht in the air. But here you're not shechting in the air, you're shechting on the ground, or you're shechting on top of the Mizrach, rather, so it's okay. Or the other, and that is considered Al Yerech. That's the Shittim of Kavetus, essentially.
It has to be the ground.
It has to be someplace on the ground, right. Okay. So in other words, when we say, but in an Al Yerech Veleka, you would think that there's no Al Yerech over here, Kamash Malon, it is considered Al Yerech to shecht it on top of the Mizrach, because at least you're shechting on something attached to the ground. Because you could. That's an extension of Al Yerech. I mean, as long as you're not shechting in the air, which can't be considered Al Yerech. Okay. Al Yerech means by the side of the Mizrach. So this is also a side of the Mizrach. Especially but Shittim Kvetus goes on to explain that we could say that later on, the Gemara is going to explain in a couple of blocks, the side where the ramp is on is considered the face of the Mizrach, so to speak, so therefore the other side, including the whole Mizrach itself, can be considered by extension the Yerech, the leg.
So in other words, you're saying the kevesh is
the
real
Mizrach? The kevesh is not the real Mizrach, but the kevesh is like the front of the Mizrach, and therefore, like the rest of it can be considered the Yerach, so to speak, like the side of the back.
Just yes, the front of the Mizrach is the Mizrach, and the rest is the back.
The side that the kevesh is on is called Pnei HaMizrach. It's called the face of the Mizrach.
Right.
Therefore, what do you have? A person has a face, and he has a body. So therefore, the rest of it is considered the body, which by extension, Yerach can mean the body. We'll see later on, tomorrow, on some of the faith, we're going to talk about that concept. Okay. Okay, so you're telling me that Rabbi Yochanan said that Rabbi Yossi said the whole Mizrach is in the northern half of the Azara. Elamayasal, Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda. What are you going to tell me then? By that logic, are you telling me Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda, who said in our Mishnah that you divide the Mizrach in half, and only if you shecht in the northern half of the Mizrach is the Korban Kosher? Are you going to say, Hochinami the Chetzi B'Tzop and the Chetzi B'Tzorim? You're going to tell me that Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda holds that the Mizrach is half in the north and half in the south, which is the second diagram over here in the lower right, where you have the Mizrach is shown in the middle of the Azara, equidistant from the two sides, so therefore half of the Mizrach is on the north and half on the south. Yes. So are you going to tell me that Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda holds that way? So you might say, sure, Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda holds that. What's the problem? Based on, if you're telling me that the fact that Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah says if he shechted kodshim anywhere on the Mizrach, then it's kosher because he says the whole thing is in the north, then using the same logic, we would have to say Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda, who says half and half, we would have to say half in the Mizrach is in the north and half in the south.
To disagree with Rabbi Yossi.
Well, and that would be why he's saying half and half. The problem with that is, but didn't you, Rav Asi, yourself say in the name of Rav Yechanan, Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, Shem Shachtan Kinegzen Bakaik of Sola? Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda agrees that if you were to shecht Korbanus Kinegzen Bakaik, parallel or opposite in the place of the Mizrach, on the ground, then it's possible. Now we'll see later on what that means exactly, but the point of the question is that obviously, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, even though he says that half of the Mizrach is kosher for shechting kodshim, but he agrees that if you were to shecht in the same place on the ground where the Mizrach, where that half of the Mizrach is supposed to be, as we'll see soon in the Gemara, what he means by that, then it would be possible. So then, in that case, it's not because he holds half of the Mizrach is in the northern side. So once we say that by Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda it's not like that, why should we assume that Rabbi Yossi, who says that it's kosher for shechting on the entire Mizrach, why should we say that necessarily? That means Rabbi Yossi says the whole Mizrach is in the north. Maybe what it is Rabbi Yossi holds, even though part of the Mizrach is in the south, nevertheless, there is a kosher that the whole thing is kosher for shechting it. And Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda would disagree with that. But it doesn't have to be that Rabbi Yossi is necessarily that we see from this what he holds would be the position of the Mizrach. So he answers it, Rav Asi answers Rav Deira, Hachi Ka'am Rav Yechanan. Yes, but what Rav Yechanan means is like this, Shneim Mikra Echad Doshu. What it is Rav Yossi and Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda are both doshing the same pasuk to arrive at their respective opinions. Namely, the pasuk says, V'zavachta Olav Es Olisecha V'es Shlomecha. The pasuk says, by the Mizbeach, right after Matan Torah, at the end of Parshat Yisro, it says, you should offer on it your Olos and your Shlom. Incidentally, by the way, I forgot to mention when we first started learning Ezra Mekoyman, when it says Ezra Mekoyman told Vachim, the Evan Ezra mentions over there that one time a min comes over to him and starts to say, and the Chachamim don't know what they're talking about. How can they say Ezer B'Kohen called Zvachim and start talking about Korbanos such as Ola and whatnot? Zvachim is only Shlom. And the Ebenezer points into this project. There's a Vachta Ola, there's Ola Sefer, that's Shlomecha. And the guy was forced to agree that he didn't know what he was talking about. Okay. So, there's a Vachta Ola, there's Ola Sefer, that's Shlomecha. So, what does it mean? You shecht on it, you Olus and you Shlomim. So Rabbi Yossi says, what the Pasuk means is, Kul Ola Ola, Kul Ola Shlomim. It means you can use any place on the chopped surface of the Mizbeach to shecht an Ola, or any place on the chopped surface to shecht Shlomim. Therefore, he says, necessarily, that it means the whole thing is valid for shechting the Ola.
How do we derive
this?
You can do it on
the Mizbeach. Because that's Ola. Literally, Ola means on it. So again, according to Tosfos that before, it means that literally Midrash, you could even the Hachila shech them on there, and the Rabbanon said you shouldn't the Hachila because the animal may defecate. According to the Mechilta, fine, Olav means next to, but whatever, again, our Gemara is not going like that. So he says, the Vachta Olav et Eilasecha et Shlomecha means the entire Mizbeach could be used for shechting Eilas, because the entire Mizbeach is considered to have the status of Sufflin, and the entire thing is kosher for Shlomim also, because we said in the previous parak that wherever you can shech an Eilas, you can also shech Shlomim. No, that's what we said, therefore, that Rabbi Yossi holds, therefore the entire top of the Mizbeach is suitable for shechting Eilas. Whereas Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda holds, no. What the pasuk means is you have to divide the Mizbeach in half. Half of it is kosher for Ola, half of it is kosher for Shlomim. And that's why he says you divide it in half. Because, he says, because Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would argue, if you're going to tell me the entire top of the Mizbeach is kosher for Shechting, Ola, then why does he even need to mention Shlomim? Hashtag kul ola ola kosher. If the pasuk is telling us the whole thing is kosher for shechting and ola, l'shlomim mebaya, would you kul ola shlomim mebaya? Would you need to say that the whole thing is kosher for shechting and shlomim? We already established in the previous parak that wherever you can shecht an ola, you can shecht the shlomim. Because you can shecht shlomim in the north or anywhere else. So therefore, it can't be, says Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, that the pasuk is telling you the whole thing is good for the ola, the whole thing is good for the shlomim. Because then there's no need to mention shlomim at all. So obviously, it must mean half of it is kosher for ola, but the other half is not. The other half, though, you could be shechting shlomim on it if you want. V'idach, so what would Rabbi Yosef answer to that?
So he would say that, where would you toughen
to... So therefore, that's the point. In other words, what we're saying so far is the fact that Rabbi Yossi, the fact that we have this process, the Vachta Olav, that's Shlomecha, and Rabbi Yossi is saying that it means the entire Mizbeach can be used for Shechting Olav, necessarily that means he has to say that it's in the northern half. Because,
Rabbi Yossi
again says it's equidistant. It's in the middle over there. So half is in the north, half is in the south. The second diagram. Because, in other words, Rabbi Yossi would say, because it says there's a Vachta Olav as Eilasecha v'as Shlomecha, and I understand the pasuk to be saying that you can shecht Olav anywhere on the top of the Mizbeach, automatically, that means the whole thing must be in the north.
Right.
Rabbi Yossi would be able to say, no, I don't learn the pasuk that way. I learn the pasuk that means you can shecht Olav on half of the Mizbeach, therefore half of the Mizbeach is in the north, and the other half is in the south.
And that's because it says Eilasecha v'as Shlomecha.
Because it says Eilasecha v'as Shlomecha, right. Because he says, because otherwise, if it meant the whole thing is kosher for Olus, then it doesn't need to say Shlomim, right?
It would say what?
It would just say Olus. It would just say Zerach Tzolov Zelosecha. V'idach. Right, because a Shlomim, yeah, where you can check an Olus only in the north, and a Shlomim you can check anywhere, right? V'idach, what would Rabbi Yossi answer to that? He would say, fine, he would say, you have a point that once you know you can check an Olus there, you would think you could check the Shlomim, but maybe not. You do need to be told, otherwise. Because Sakurada Hamina, because otherwise you would think to think like this.
Says
Rabbi Yossi. You would think otherwise like this. It didn't mention Ola and Shlomim. You would think like this. Ola who did Dochik Lay Makim. You know what? The Ola, after all, you pressed for space. Because you only have the northern part of the Azara where you're able to shecht Ola. It's another Kodshe. And especially we learned before that in fact according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, the north consists only of the area directly north of the Mizbeach. So you have a very small area, relatively speaking, where you can shecht an ola. So therefore, so the prophet gives you a break, so therefore the Torah gives you a break. Besides, that you can shecht in that narrow, confined area due north of the Mizbeach, fine, the Torah gives you a break. This area, no, the area due north of the Mizbeach, not the shaded area, but the area north of
this area.
Right. So given that you only have that area, then fine, the prophet gives you a break and says, fine, you can also shecht them on the top of the Mizbeach. Avo Shlomim, the Lejach is Lemachim, but the Shlomim, you're not pressed for space. You have the entire Azara where you could check them. Ema lois, you would think maybe the Torah therefore prevents you from shechting shlamim there. Kamash malon, and that is why Rabbi Yossi says that's why it has to mention shlamim in the pasuk.
Otherwise you would think
only an ola you could shecht on them, not a shlamim at all, because a shlamim, why bother shechting on top of them in death when you have the whole rest of the azara to shecht it in?
Where do we know that a shlamim has the whole?
We said in the previous parak, we said they could literally shchot it pesach ayomar, the shachat ayomar, lifnei ayomar, we learned from the tzuchim, over there you can shecht it anywhere in the azara. Shlamim, kodshim, kalim, shechotim, b'chomokim, b'azara. So far what we have is again like
need shlamim.
So therefore you need shlamim in this pasuk, says Rabbi Yossi. Whereas Rabbi Yossi of Yehuda doesn't accept that. He says the fact is we know any way we can shecht an ola, you can shecht a shlamim. I don't accept this logic that you would say, okay, but there's too crowded a space for olas and therefore the pasuk is giving you a break but not to shlamim. No, if you're allowed to shecht ola there, for sure you'd be allowed to shecht shlamim. If the pasuk therefore is mentioning both ola and shlamim, it can only mean, says Rabbi Yossi of Yehuda, that only half the mizbeach is kosher for olas and the other half is kosher for shlamim. But anyway, the bottom line is
which part would be for Eilis and which part would be
for Shlomim? The half that's in the north, the points of the Eilis, it would be for Eilis. The half that's in the south would be for Shlomim. Okay. Fine. Gufa. Okay, so now we've explained what Rabbi Yochanan means when he says, Oymahoy Rabbi Yossi kolam azeach sopan. Rabbi Yossi is getting that from his understanding of the Pasuk as a vasta olam, as Eilis Echa, that's Shlomacha. If the Pasuk is implying that you can check Eilis anywhere on the top of the mizbeach, then the whole thing must be in the north. Fine. Gufer, getting back to what we just said, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechman, Moji, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Shem Shach, and Kineg, and Bechak of Sulayt. We said Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda does agree that if you were to shech the Kodshim, parallel opposite it, Kineg, and literally means opposite it, or in the same space or something, Bechak, on the ground, Sulayt, then the Korbanos would be possible.
Right.
Now, Rashi points out, now the first and most obvious thing you would think maybe he means is Kinegdan means east or west of the Mizbeach. So if you would say, for example, here you have the fourth diagram here on the lower left corner, where you have, you would think maybe what Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda means to say is that if you were to check in the areas that are pointed to by the arrows, the areas that are directly east or directly west of the northern half of the Mizbeach, that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda would be moja that they're possible. Rashi says we can't understand it that way because we know already Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says that only the area due north of the Mizbeach is kosher for kosher function. So automatically then any area outside of that, any of those areas pointed to by the arrows are going to be possible according to him anyway. He doesn't have to say moja. He doesn't have to say that he agrees that those places are possible.
It's implied.
Right. So we have to understand. If that was all it was, then Rav Asi or Rav Zera wouldn't have had a problem with it before because we know what Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda holds as far as Sofim. No, therefore we have to understand the word Kinegda means something else. So we say Moshe Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav Asi Rav Yechon, and Moshe Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda Shem Shach and Kinegda Makar Kof Solos. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda agrees that if you were Shech a Kodshim opposite them or parallel to them or in their space on the ground, then they're possible. So Omer Rav Asi Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, my Kinegda Makar Kof. What do you mean Kinegda Makar Kof? Ilema Ama Yisoid Ama Solos. Do you mean that Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda is talking about if you were to put the korban on top of the Ama inset that constitutes the side, as we learned in the previous parak, or the ama inset that constitutes the side, the ledge, the walkway around the mizbeach, and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, I'm murdered that if you shecht in the mayor, they're possible. Well, of course, high gofing is there. And those places themselves are part of the mizbeach, the side is just as much part of the mizbeach.
No, that's
the question. But you would argue maybe can it count them relative to the top of the mizbeach. But you can't say that, and the fact is they are part of the Mizbeach.
Yeah.
I go for Mizbeach.
Yeah.
They are part of the Mizbeach, and if
it's
he says, yeah, and if he, and also, right, so, and also, yeah, right, so you can't say that. I go from Mizbeach, but I might connect them to Kaza. And also, what do you mean, opposite that on the ground? It's not on the ground, it's on the Mizbeach.
It's high on the ground.
That's the point, in other words, it's not on the ground. But Kaza wouldn't lie on the ground itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so that doesn't work.
No.
Okay. So you may say another possibility. Maybe Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda means, I hold that if you shecht Kodshim Kalim on the northern half of the Mizbeach, one second, let's read. Again, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah said that you can shecht Kodesh HaKalim on the northern half of the Mizbeach. Going again, the Mizbeach is in the center of the Azara, and according to him, you can shecht Kodesh HaKalim in its northern half, but that is in the northern half of the Azara. However, we're saying that he agreed that if you shechted Kenegdan Makarka, then they would be possible. But we could say, the Chitain, you would say, what does he mean Kenegdan Makarka? Maybe the Ovid Mechilos Makarka. Maybe he means that you, if they make tunnels underground, under the Mizbeach, the Shachapahu, and you would have shecht Kodshim over there, then Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda would agree that such a thing is possible. Again, even though Rabbi Yossi is, so you have Rabbi Yossi saying that the whole Mizbeach is kosher for shechting them, and Rabbi Yossi with Yehuda saying only half of it, but he would be saying that if you were to tunnel under the northern half of the Mizbeach and shecht there, that it would be possible.
The Mizbeach has to be attached to the ground.
If you were to dig a tunnel under the Mizbeach, would it even be considered a valid Mizbeach? Well, tell me, but we learn in a Braisa. It says in a Pasuk, right next to the Pasuk over there, about Zavakta, all of a sudden, it's about Shemacha. It says, Mizbeach, actually, it's the beginning of that same Pasuk, Mizbeach Adoma Tassali. It says, a Mizbeach of earth you should make for me. And what does it mean of earth? Shehem Chuba Me Adoma, means it needs to be completely attached to the ground. You're not allowed to build it on top of tunnels or on top of arches. So therefore, it's impossible for there to be a tunnel under the Mizbeach. And the Mizbeach still be kosher. And as we'll learn later on in the parak, if the Mizbeach is possible, then you can't shecht Korbanos. So we can't say that he means that if you shecht under the Mizbeach, it'll be possible, because obviously it'll be possible. The Mizbeach itself is possible in that case. The answer is that we can say that what Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda means, what Rabbi Yosef means when he says that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda is moida, means suppose that they made the Mizbeach small. We're going to learn later on in the parashah. We're going to learn later on in the parashah that there are certain details in the Mizbeach that are essential, and without them it's possible. Among them is it has to be square, it has to have chronos, there's a couple of things, but there are other things that are not ma'akiv, one of them being the size. It can be even the minimum size, it says later, is the size of the Mizbeach that Moshe Rabbeinu made in the Midbar. Well, the whole thing was 5 by 5 amos, but we'll see later with the Zachar and Machloek of how to understand that, but whatever, we'll get into that later. But the one in the second Beit HaMikdash was 32 by 32. But in principle, they could make it smaller. They could also make it larger, by the way. We'll learn later on in the parak. You have a certain amount of latitude to make it larger as well. It's kind of funny, actually, Bechlal. I mean, the whole thing that you can make it smaller or larger, and the fact that we have all this whole machlokas, where exactly in the Azara it was situated, it's kind of funny, because the Rambam uses the expression, the Mizbeach, the space, the place of the Mizbeach is very precise, because the place where Adam brought his Korbanos, and where the Akedah took place, and where Noach brought his Korbanos, and so forth. But we see from our Gemara, there's a certain amount of flexibility as far as the location and as far as the size of it. Okay, anyway, the point is, let's say they would decide to shrink the Mizbeach. And now we have to go to the next page of diagrams over here. So you have an example over here. Let's say they decided to shrink the size of the Mizbeach. So in the top left corner, in the top right corner, you have an example where they decided to shrink the Mizbeach. The original footprint of the Mizbeach is shown over there in gray. And then they decided to shrink it. It's thought to be square, because square is one of the things that's essential for its kashrus. But if they were to shrink it, then you have an area over there that used to be part of the top of the, used to be part of the location of the Mizbeach, part of the footprint of the Mizbeach. Now it's not anymore. That square shown in gray. So that's the point. Even though the Yosef of Yehuda is saying that if you shecht it on the northern half of the Mizbeach, that is kosher, nevertheless, he agrees that if they were to do that, if they were to make the Mizbeach smaller, and now you have a space that used to be part of the footprint of the Mizbeach, and now isn't anymore,
it would be kosher.
That it would be possible, actually, he says.
Possible.
Now, that must mean that it must mean, therefore, that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda holds that the Mizbeach is located in the southern half of the Azara. So therefore, now when you shrank its footprint, that extra space, which used to be part of the Mizbeach, is also in the southern half. So otherwise, why would it be possible?
He said originally that the Mizbeach is
because we said that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda what we said before, that Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says maybe that the Mizbeach is located all in the northern half of the Ezar. That he says that it's half in the north and half in the south. But now what we're saying is that it doesn't really matter. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would say that if you made the Mizbeach smaller, that space where the Mizbeach used to be is now possible for Shechtin Kodshin. What it means is Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, different than what we said before. We thought before that Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says that the Mizbeach is in the middle. Now we're saying that actually what Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is implying with his statement is that the Mizbeach is entirely in the southern half of the Azara. Even to begin with. Before we were talking about Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would say that because, fine, there is a Kosovo, that half of the Mizbeach is valid for Shechting Olas, even though the whole thing is in the southern half of the Mizbeach. However, even though it's all in the southern half of the Azara. However, he would also say, if they were to shrink the Mizbeach, so that now it's closer to the south, so now you have more of the south open, which used to be part of the Mizbeach, nevertheless, that place would be possible for Shechting Kodshi Kodshim. As long as it consisted of part of the Mizbeach, then fine. It was kosher for Shechting Kodshi Kodshim, even though it's located in the southern half of the Azara, that gray square of it. But now that it's not part of the Mizbeach anymore, then it's possible for that purpose. That would be what he's saying.
Saying in essence to shrink the Mizbeach.
So another again, Rabbi Yosi is saying the Mizbeach. Rabbi Yosi is saying the Mizbeach is all in the northern half.
Right.
Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda now is saying that Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying the entire Mizbeach is in the southern half. Therefore, when he says like this. Fine, but nevertheless, because you have the pasuk as a vasta all of a sudden the sefer shonacha, so the pasuk is telling us that the northern half of the mizbeach, even though it is in fact in the southern half of the azara, but because it's on the mizbeach and it's the northern half of the mizbeach, then it's considered an extension of the north, and you can check kodesh kodeshim. However, if that area is no longer part of the mizbeach because you shrank down the size of the mizbeach, then that space becomes possible to make it. That's what he means. Kenegda b'karet. That's what he means. The space parallel. In other words, he's saying that's exactly it. He's saying as long as that place is part of the Mizbeach, it is kosher, even though it's located in the southern half of the Azara, because it's on top of the Mizbeach.
He meant if without shrinking, if the south means the northern.
I mean the northern part of the Mizbeach, but it is in the southern half of the Azara. Right.
That's kosher.
He says. However, if they shrink the Mizbeach, then that place, that same spot, becomes possible, because now it's not part of the Mizbeach. So we'll continue tomorrow. We'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with this analysis of where exactly in the Azara was the Mizbeach located, according to the different opinions. It's interesting. The Rambam actually doesn't pass in like either of these, like any of these three opinions so far. The Rambam in Hilchos Beis Abchira writes that the according to the figures he gives over there, it comes out according to his figures there. 7 amas of the Mizbeach are on the northern side, and the other 25 are on the southern side, which doesn't really fit either any of the opinions that he said. In other words, what he says, basically, the entire width of the Azara is 135 amas. The Rambam understands like this. You have 60 and a half amas from the northern wall of the Azara until the northern base of the Mizbeach. Then you have the Mizbeach itself consists of 32 amas and 30 amas of the Kedesh, and then you have from there 12 and a half amas to the opposite wall. So that's how the Rambam learned it. So it comes out, according to him, that the Mizbeach is not completely in the northern half of the Azara, like we're saying, Rabbi Yosi, not completely in the southern half, like Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, not in the middle, like we originally thought Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says, but rather mostly in the south, but about a little less than a quarter of it in the north.
And it would still fit the Pesach Olmoy?
Well, part of it is still Pesach HaYom Moed.
Part of it, sure.
Well, the whole Mizbeach can't be anyway. Pesach HaYom Moed is Pesach HaYom Moed. We're going to discuss tomorrow. The door of the Heichal was 10 amos wide. The door of the Olam is 20 amos wide. So he was 32 amos. So no matter what, the whole Mizbeach is not Pesach HaYom Moed anyway.
Just in the middle.
That's according to one opinion. It is. But again, yeah. So according to the Rambam, it's offset. So according to these various opinions, it may be offset to a certain extent. Yes. So we'll deal with tomorrow.
It's 20, then 6 on the south and 6 on the north, and the middle part would be facing exactly the...
That would be one way, if we say it's equidistant, and that's exactly what it would be. 6 amos of the Mizeah, not in front of the
north.
20, yeah,
and
6 amos north,
and
20
in
the middle, right. Right, that's one way of looking at it. But again, according to what we're saying, according to the Yossi, that the whole Mizbeach is in the north, what it means is the entire Mizbeach is north of the, well, we're going to figure out tomorrow, when he says all in the north, does he mean north of the midpoint of the Azara, or does he mean maybe north of the northern doorposts of the Heichol, or the Ulam, so that will work out tomorrow.